Welcome to another edition of The List, a Write Fiction podcast. We've got a wonderful show for you all today about our favorite songs with drum machines. Before we get started, if you love the pod, please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe on your listening app. It helps us reach new listeners just like you. Also, be sure to check out our website, www.writefiction.com, where you can find a Spotify playlist with all our picks that we mentioned in the pod. Now, let's get to it. While the first drum machine was created sometime in the 11 or 1200s by Ismail al-Jazari, it wasn't till the 1980s when the Lin LM1 was introduced and was adopted by rock and pop artists, including Prince and Michael Jackson, and the Roland TR-808 began to significantly influence the development of dance music, especially electronic dance music and hip-hop. As time rolled on, the drum machine was everywhere in pop music, to the point where songs today we think might be live drumming are in fact drum machines. Now, as a fan of real drums, the overwhelming use and popularity of drum machines leaves me with quite a few questions of how they have helped or hurt music and drummers in particular. Well, on today's show, we'll examine this question and much, much more as we discuss our favorite songs with drum machines. So with that, let's get to the guys. And of course, we have our regular folks here. We have Adam, yep. Blon Selick, the podiatrist Zelensky. We have Freddie Bo Betty Berman. Present. We have Brendan Patty Meta McGeehan. Ba-da-cha. And of course, there's me, Aaron Corn Teeth, aka the John Stockton of podcast dishing out assists left and right. And how you guys doing, guys? Are you guys all vaccinated?
Yep. Yeah, man.
Yeah, just got my second.
Nice.
Live music coming your way, finally.
Yeah.
Tired of looking at you guys on screens. I'm just
so excited. Actually, I just got a couple more solo gigs booked in King of Prussia coming this fall.
Nice.
Which I'm super excited about. Those gigs are always like incredibly... I'll just be frank. They're incredibly weird, but it's really good to have a gig booked.
Weird is better than nothing.
People.
Weird is better than nothing.
That
speaking
is
of weird, isn't it kind of weird? Like you're seeing all these like tour announcements, and it's all like starting in October, and it's just like it's just so strange. You know, usually you get into January and you're seeing like the summer slate, and we're just like, oh look, Chris Stapleton is starting his tour in October through. You know, June of next year, like you
I
know,
saw
a
that.
Year from it. Yeah,
and I'm I saw like, that.
Yeah, it's just a weird feeling. You're like, oh wait, I can't wait to see music in 5 months.
And also, some of the festivals that normally happen in the summer will now be in September.
Yeah,
you know, like Firefly, Exponential. Bonnaroo. Oh, Bonnaroo too.
Bonnaroo's in September. Yeah.
Man, so basically, the fall is going to be nuts.
It's going to be lit.
Yeah, that's how the kids say it.
But will it? Well, is this a forever change? Probably not. It probably once it's back to summer, it'll be you know normal.
I hope not. I mean, summertime and music is like, come on, it's hand in hand. The festivals, right. Come on.
Yeah, I think that. I don't think they'll shift.
Vacation time for people too.
Yeah, vacation time. So. Like I tell you what, September. You know, with the kids at the house, and I mean, like everybody's got their you know, their back to school, the sports, their homework.
Right.
That seems like a tough time to be really, you know, YOLO in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that won't last.
Yeah. But anyway, glad to have music back. And we're actually doing some recording of ourselves to get into that music fray for the fall, I guess. And, you know, we're working on our record and currently on the vocal part. That's my part, I guess. And we have a couple amazing guests coming in to help us out with that. And I'm really excited about this record, guys. It really sounds amazing. And I just listened to it over and over again. What do you think? Are you guys pretty excited about it? Or are you just like, eh, are you over it?
No, I'm not over it, but I feel like every record has like all of these different stages. Like when you first start, there's all this excitement and everything sounds amazing. And then like inevitably in the middle of the production process, there's this like low point of like, is it okay? I don't know. I don't know if anything's okay. I feel like I might be there. And then hopefully by the end we lift up and it's like, oh, it is okay. Maybe it's good.
Yeah. Yeah. We've been living with these tunes for like, seriously, like forever.
A little extra than usual.
And also there's a, you know, due to the pandemic, maybe just due to everybody being busy, there's kind of a various lulls in activity. You know, because you have to pay the rent, you got to do other things.
Exactly.
So there's that.
Yeah. And so let's get to our topic though. But I just want to ask, you know, to start with, was this an easy or hard topic for you? Say, Adam, I'll go to you, man. Was this an easy or hard topic for you to kind of choose songs?
Not that tough, really. I mean, you know, you start doing your little bit of half-assed internet research, and you're like, oh, yeah, there's a bunch of songs I like. You know, when it's just songs, it's the search is a little different because, like, with an album, like, you know, it's a collection. It's a more of a matter-of-fact choice with the songs. You're like, well, I like this song, but I do like this song. I mean, it didn't tear at my brain for all that long, no.
Yeah. Yeah, what about you? The resident drummer. What about you, man?
It was easy.
It was easy?
It was easy. It was, you know, it's like, what do you leave out in a way?
Gotcha.
And then, you know, there's songs that are kind of obvious picks that some of us picked, you know, myself included. So, you know, there's that. So it's, you know, it was easy for sure.
Yeah. I hear you on that. Oh well, I will confess to you guys though that while picking these songs, I did feel a little bit like I don't know if it's bad or I felt guilty. I guess guilty that I'm like thinking about how great these drum machine songs are. Felt a little guilty as like a musician guy or whatever.
Because you're giving props to a robot.
Yeah, it's exactly. It. I'm like, oh man, this robot killed it.
Yeah, it's well, it's funny to me. Anytime, like, I feel like anytime in the studio when a drum machine or a loop or something has been suggested, it's almost always by a drummer. So I don't know what's up with that. And even with us, like, one of the songs we're working on has, like, there's this potential drum machine part, and Freddie was the one that pitched it.
Oh, really? So, I really thought that was you, Brendan.
But Freddie, it was Freddie's idea to begin with.
Yeah.
Man, that's weird. That's so weird.
Well, we should save some of that conversation for down the road later on.
Okay.
Because I have definite thoughts about drum machines and they're mostly good.
Okay. Positive. We'll leave that note for the listeners as we kind of dig into our picks here. And to kick things off, I'm going to go to you, Mr. Blonde Selick, Adam Zielinski. What are your top three favorite songs of drum machines?
All right, here we go. Hold on to your butts. All right, number three, I got A Sharp Dressed Man by ZZ Top. Which, it's kind of surprising on that one.
It is very surprising.
Frank Beard was very surprised about it, too. All right, at number two, I got from 1982, Planet Rock by Afrika Bambaataa and Soul Sonic Force. Kind of, you know, the beginnings of hip hop right there. It's kind of a nice, you know, to throw that out there. It's like, you know, hip hop, you know, they've used it a little. I mean, they've used samples, but yes, drum machine too. And then number one is kind of a classic, well known by the entire Milky Way galaxy, 1978, Heart of Glass by Blunt.
Nice. Very cool, man. Very cool. Freddie.
Yeah.
What are your top three?
Now, real briefly, you know, a couple of these tunes have drum machine and real drums in it. So, like Heart of Glass. My number three has a hybrid, what they're calling hybrid now. Don't Come Around Here No More, Tom Petty and Heartbreakers. Don't come around here no more. Don't come around here no more. Whatever you're looking for. From the Southern Accents records, Lindrum. And then towards the end, Stan Lynch comes in, I believe, when it goes to double time. Sexual Healing, 1982, Marvin Gaye, Midnight Love, Roland TR 808. And number one, Rock Your Baby, 1974, George McRae. TR-77, one of the most iconic, I guess, drum machine records. Those are my three picks.
Very nice, sir. Very nice. All right, Meta. What do you got for your top three?
Okay. My number three, I went with Sly and the Family Stone off of Fresh, the first record in time, using the iconic Maestro Rhythm King. It's 1973. My number two pick, I went with Bjork from the late 90s and the song Hunter, and she used the Roland 909 on that track. If travel is searching and home what's been found. And then my number one, this was easy, the first one that came to mind, 1972, Timmy Thomas, Why Can't We Live Together? Actually one of those built-in rhythm samples on a Lowry organ. I think it's the cha-cha setting on that one. That's my nice. Number one.
Wow.
P.S. Same label as George McRae, I believe. I believe they were both part of that Miami, you know, KC and the Sunshine Stone Records deal vibe down there.
Cool. We got kindred number ones.
Yep.
Nice. And so this is me, Aaron Brown, John Stockton of this podcast, a.k.a. Corn Teeth, I guess, as my new, as Adam has christened me.
You can't be left alone on just, you know, someone's got to give you a nickname besides yourself.
Yeah.
Because I would be, like I'd, it, be, the, I'd be the Michael Jordan of podcasts if I could get my own.
All right. All right, Michael.
Doesn't work.
So my number three pick is Peace of My Love, released in 1988 by the band, the singer group Guy. And the reason I picked this specific song, well, I'll just say, is I picked this song to give a shout out to Teddy Riley there. And then my number two is Island Letter, 1974. I believe it's off Inspiration Information. Shuggy Otis. Wonderful song. And then my number one song, which might be controversial or not, I'm not sure in this topic, but it's called Love and You and I by the band Jazzanova off their record In Between, which was released in 2002. And go check that song out, guys. And with that, we're going to take a short break and be back in a second with a lot more discussion on our picks. So hold on. And we are back. And so, as a musician guy, it pains me to say this, but I almost know nothing about drum machines. I sometimes I don't even know when there's a drum machine on a song. As you guys kind of pointed out with some of these songs, like that ZZ Top song from you, Adam, A Sharp Dressed Man, I had no idea that that was a drum machine. Not even a hint of in my mind. I was like, did Adam pick a wrong song here? Does he know what topic we're doing today?
I didn't until I researched it.
It was crazy. I was like, I couldn't tell. So with that, I kind of want to go to our resident meta, Patty McGann. And can you kind of give us a little background on the drum machine, the different types, and just kind of overview just for all the people that don't know anything, such as myself?
Definitely. Yeah, the term drum machine is really all-encompassing to a lot of things that we're talking about on the show. So I'll start with like what we would kind of classically call a drum machine, like take the 808 or something like that. So that works by basically it's what's called like a sequencer. So you have a bunch of buttons that are all subdivisions of the beat. And so you sequence or you program the different parts of the drum kit to hit on the parts of the beat that you want. Like if you want the kick drum 4 on the floor, you're hitting the buttons 1, 5, 9, and 13. And that way you have kick on all of those. And a lot of those drum machines usually derive their sounds from a synthesizer. And so like the 808, the 909, those are synthesizer drum sounds, as opposed to a sampler, which is also used a lot and in this conversation as well, where that actually samples live audio waveforms and puts them onto like a memory stick on a computer. And when you hit the button to trigger that sound, it triggers that sample. So those are in the mix with us as well. Then it gets into like modular synthesis, which like Radiohead Idiotech is a classic example of that. That's more of a synthesizer that's made to sound like a drum machine, but it's actually much more complex than a standard drum machine. Then you've got like these quirkier ones, like my number one, the Timmy Thomas track that has like a programmed drum machine in an organ. In this case, like I call it like the grandma organ, where you just hit a button and you don't really have any say whatsoever over the parameters like tempo or sounds or sequence or anything. It's just a pre-programmed loop and you just hit go. So those are kind of the big categories anyway of what we're dealing with today.
Mm. Yeah, I kind of do. I have a little experience with those pre-program. I remember when I was a kid, I had a little Casio, and I would hit the button, and it was like a samba,
yep,
or rumba.
Yes, that's it.
So exactly. I have a little experience with that. So, and I bet you a lot of people do have with that. But Freddie, I want to kind of take it to you now, and as a drummer, kind of what's your take on on all this stuff as far as like what Brendan was saying about the different kinds and also, like, do you like drum machines?
I do. I have a love relationship. There's a lot of chatter from drummers in particular how, drum machines maybe took work away from them. And maybe, like in the 80s when a Lindrum first came around, that was true. But a drum machine will never replace the live feel of a real drummer. However, that being said, I love drum machines and I love playing along with them because it's like the old saying, the tape don't lie. Well, the drum machine don't lie. If you're off, you're off. You're going to know it. You're going to hear it. You're going to, nowadays with digital recording, you're going to see it. You know what I mean? And I think drum machines have only helped drummers get tighter with time. You know what I mean? Like, as opposed to records that were made pre-drum machine. And I also want to mention the concept of a click track. Basically, a metronome, right? Clicks have been used in making movies since, like, the 20s. People just don't realize.
Like, how have they been used in, like, the movie kind of thing?
To sync, like, in a studio, like, in Hollywood or wherever they were making movies in the 20s, because Hollywood wasn't always the center of filmmaking. Actually, Philadelphia was one of the centers way back before they moved to Hollywood, where the weather's nice all the time. But you would have an orchestra playing, and you would have a metronome being, you know, piped through the speakers in sync to the film that the orchestra was playing to sync up the scenes in the movie. And that's the original click track.
Mm.
People think it's something, there's a new thing, but it's not.
That's
at
neat.
All. So there's that. And I just, you know, every time I sit down to practice, I have a metronome on. Always. Because when it comes to making records, that's where it's at. And I'll take it one step further. When it comes to recording, and you guys know this, I hate playing to beep, boop, 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 beep, boop, boop. I always like to have a loop, something musical. You know what I mean? Even if it's like just a drum beat, like boom, pat, boom, pat, boom. You know, just something that's more musical to lock in with. So, in essence, anytime I'm recording, I'm playing with a drum machine. So, I got no problem with drum machine. I just want to add real quickly that, Brendan, your pick In Time is a drum machine, but it's also Andy Newmark playing one of the funkiest drum grooves ever. And the story of him auditioning for Sly is pretty amazing, too. That's another story.
You're not going to give the story?
Do you know it, Brent?
I don't know it.
No, I don't.
You guys?
Nope.
He basically, he was playing a gig at the Troubadour, and somebody called him up and said, yo, Sly wants you to come over. And he came over, and basically Sly was laying on his waterbed, and there was a mountain of powder next to him. And he had a drum set in the bedroom, and he just said to Andy Newmark, play something.
Wow.
And that was it. And that's the same room, same drum set that he recorded, because he had a recording console in his bedroom that he recorded In Time.
Wow.
In Sly's bedroom.
I love it.
So
yeah, that's weird.
That's the story I've heard.
I mean,
that's very believable. That is incredibly believable.
it's not a stretch to imagine that. I think, well, I'm glad you're bringing that one up too, because I love how In Time starts off fresh, which is definitely my favorite Sly record. And we didn't really get to touch on it in a big way on our funk episode, so I kind of wanted to slide it in here. But I love how this record comes right after Riot, which is so introspective,
right,
and is like all Rhythm King. And then this record like picks up where Riot left off, because the whole record starts off with the Rhythm King, and then it slowly fades away when those live drums come in.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to bring that up too, Freddie, is like just the production technique. I love that hybrid approach that you mentioned earlier of drum machine with live drums mixed in. I just did a session last week with a friend of mine who is a producer and a drummer. And
Adrian.
Yeah. And part of his method, almost every time we work together, is before he starts, he sequences his own drum machine pattern that he plays off of. And sometimes those patterns make it onto the record because he's interacting with the music of that drum machine. It's like he has to set up the whole vibe before he can drum to it. And I've really come to learn the importance of that and how interesting it can be.
Yep. Right on.
What do you got, Adam?
Okay, after listening to the two authorities on this, and I'm happy about that. I like kind of being in the passenger seat for the podcast. You know, it's kind of like when we had Andrew Lipke on here, and I just like learned like 5,000 things in like 10 minutes. But okay, so I want to turn it the other way, and if the drum machine is not, you know, not just a complimentary piece, but completely takes over the rhythm portion of the recording or live performance, do you guys feel the same way? Either one of you.
I think it can be great. I mean, we're talking about a large portion of pop music from the 80s and also like a huge cross section of hip hop too. It's like exclusively drum machine. That is the whole backbone of the beat. So I think it can be fine. My personal taste is I find the drum machine to be like kind of novel. And so I like when it's incorporated in ways where you still have more of a breathing element to the music, because I find, you know, I think great music is built off of tension and release. Obviously, I'm not inventing that concept or that notion. And so when you have something that is strictly programmed and rigid, and then you have someone breathing and interpreting the groove, I think having that slight rub can be great. And so that's just my personal taste with it.
Well, I'm kind of with you on that. I'm thinking on the terms of hip hop as well. There's like, I think hip hop with full band is worlds and worlds better than like hip hop with just like, you know, drum machine and DJ. I don't know. There's just something a little more engaging about it.
Well, Adam, are you a fan of, was it Jay Dilla? Is that correct?
Yeah. Like Jay Dilla. Yeah.
Now he used, drum machines, right? But he didn't program them, right? So he like just tapped them out as it's happening, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah. He did a lot of that, yeah.
But didn't he use sample like classic R&B grooves?
That as is well. One. Yeah, he did both.
So in terms of his use of the drum machine, it's like almost as an instrument as opposed to is a electronic thing where, you know, everything is like quantized and like in its right spot, right?
In the moment too.
Yeah. So that's a kind of different look at the drum machine as an instrument as opposed to as a mechanical thing.
Well, in the moment. Yeah. Cause it's the same thing as like a keyboard is basically just a sound that you push a key. So if you're doing it in the moment, much like a drum machine, then
is that considered a drum machine at that point in time then?
No, that's more the sampler that we're talking about. Like manipulating a sampler, it may take the form of like pads that you hit with your fingers, or in some cases drumsticks or something like that. But yeah, you're more triggering a sample than these sort of classical drum machines where you set a tempo and you've got that 16-step sequence that you're programming what it
gotcha.
Is. Although I wanted to find a way to work this song into this episode because I didn't find a way to use it as one of my picks because I couldn't find enough about like how they actually came up with the drums. But I want to talk about Poison, Belle Biv DeVoe. Like that is clearly a programmed thing. I think it's a combination of like that sampled snare that has a little bit of a swing setting. And then the kick to me sounds very much 808 ish, but that grooves hard. So hard.
Right.
it's as rigid as you can get. Like it's the same thing all throughout.
Right.
Freddie, what do you got, man?
I want to talk about Planet Rock.
Ah.
I think it needs to be spoken about because in terms of hip-hop, it's maybe one of the first records, period. And I'm reading about it now. So basically, you guys know that that groove is taken from a Kraftwerk song, right? Is everybody aware of that?
No, yeah, they got this whole song was created because it's almost an homage to Kraftwerk.
Wow,
right? But here's the thing, and I'm reading about it now because I just clicked on your link.
Ah,
right. So the studio's equipment included a Neve console, Studer 24-track tape machine, Yuri monitors.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you pronounce it? Lexicon, digital delay, Sony Reverb, Fairlight, digital synthesizer. But what they wanted to do, they didn't have a Roland TR-808. So they found one advertised in the Village Voice, man with drum machine, $20 a session. They played the Kraftwerk song Numbers and asked to have that programmed into the drum machine. The 808 was programmed through the Neve console, which Baker, Arthur Baker, who produced the session, described as an amazing console, which it is. And that's how that track was, that drum track was laid down.
Brendan, what do you got, man?
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, Freddie, in terms of that process, because I've heard stories of this, because this was before my time working in studios, but like in the 80s when drum machines were like the most popular thing and such a trend in production, apparently you would have a guy or a person that you would bring in as the drum machine person, and they would have just like racks and racks of gear that they were bringing in, and they were these specialists, and they like carved out a job for themselves as being someone who's a master of that technology at the time. And I know a couple engineers now that like got their start doing that and then since grew into other jobs.
There is one guy in particular who I've actually met. He's from New York, and he started out as a, you know, trap set drummer, and I think he still plays. And if you go to like AllMusic or Discogs and just type in his name, you'll be there all day. His name is Jimmy Brelauer, Brelower. And he was the guy in New York. And wow. I think he's still, and now he does mixing. Like he's got a whole separate sideline. But I've met him, sweetheart of a guy, but he was the man.
Yeah.
At the Power Station, all the big studios in New York back in the 80s.
So we're doing a little love fest here, but I'd like to kind of, you know, stick a fork in it. And so there's a pick here that most people will probably think that I would love that I do not like, and mainly it's because of the drum machine, and that's Sexual Healing, 1982, Marvin Gaye. I absolutely I'm disgusted by this song.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, like, if it comes on the radio, I'll be like, I'll sing it.
Knowing how much you love Marvin Gaye, that's like, that's a shock.
Yeah, you know? It's just so static. I think that's what it is.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but I totally agree with you, Aaron.
Oh!
I think that's where, like, the introduction of the, I guess, the Roland TR-808, it's just like, that's it. I mean, like, his voice is amazing and everything, but it's just too static,
I think. That's funny. It's funny that you mentioned that, because that's actually, in my timeline, one of the songs where, like, once I heard it, I was like, well, drum machines are here to stay. Marvin Gaye, you know what I mean, who was a great drummer himself.
Yeah, right.
You know, I can't imagine that song without it. Now,
no, of course not, but still, like, if there were actual real drums in it, maybe it'll be actually a good song,
or at least more timeless, because it sounds super dated.
it totally sounds dated. Totally. Yeah.
I just want to ask you, follow up on that, Freddie. So when that song came out and it kind of hit you and like all the drummers back at the time, were you like, all right, guys, we got to get the drum machines and like learn how to do this thing? Did you kind of go that way, or were you like, let me go to whatever, you know, like, what was your response?
Well, like I said, I have a love relationship with drum machines. You know, my good friend, the late Doug Grigsby, bass player extraordinaire, I'll never forget, I was hanging out with him in the studio one time, we were doing a session, and he had this little Roland drum machine, and he was programming the shit out of this thing. Like, he was just, and it fascinated me. And it was the kind, like you had mentioned, Brendan, where it was like, what, you know, you program the kick drum, and you set it up on 16th notes, the kick drums 1 and 5, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And he was just really fluid. And I was fascinated. And, you know, I have two drum machines downstairs. I have in the basement, I have a 909 and a 727. You know what I mean? But I haven't used them in years. They're collecting dust because now I got on my phone, I have freaking, you know, loops galore. Latin loops, rock loops, funk group, whatever I need, it's right there on my phone. So I love drum machines. And I'll never forget the first time I encountered a Linn drum. I was like, oh man, this sounds great. This is awesome.
Well, it's worth saying too, like, effectively the drum machine as we know it is dead because no one really is using the physical units anymore. They're using the samples of that, right, and then they're loading them into a sampler and using them as you please. That's where the lines get blurred with some of the terminology, right, that we're throwing around.
Correct. But
it's fun. And so to piggyback on that and what you just said, Freddie, with the Linn drum. So as you guys know, I've been working with Rob Hyman and Cyndi Lauper on this new musical project. And obviously they have a long history of writing songs together in the era where drum machines were coming up and being the popular thing. And so I was talking to Rob the other day and he said that he has the original Linn drum that they used on Time After Time.
Yeah, I'm sure he does.
So he told, and he asked me, he was like, I don't know what to do with this thing because we would like to use it with some of the writing that we're doing. So I was like, can we sample it? And if we get it sampled, you guys can use it on everything and it'll be so easy. So
absolutely,
we're working on that. It would be like such a cool piece of music history to get those specific samples.
Dude, oh yeah, Rob's got every piece of gear he ever owned. I remember being in the studio with him once and the Jupiter or Juno that he did the solo on Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Yeah.
He's got a piece of tape with the patch like right there.
Yep.
You know, because I guess maybe he was doing some live gigs with her too.
Yeah, so, and to recall that.
He's got everything.
He does. He has one of those Lowry organs from the Timmy Thomas track, too. That's where I first learned about the Lowrys and how cool they are. They have so many interesting features. They have this button where you can hit, it's like the repeater, and it's not an arpeggiator. It just breaks up the notes into like eighth notes whenever you hold a chord or a note. It's just interesting, wow. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I do want to kind of go back to the drum machine thing, and I have a couple questions about, I guess, or to stuff to throw about my picks. And the first one is with the Island Letter with Shuggie Otis. I don't know. Are you guys familiar with this song at all?
Yep.
If you are, for me, this is one of those ones when I kind of juxtapose it against this Sexual Healing, where it's a drum machine that goes on and on. It's really static. But the music around it is so amazingly lush and everything that it fits like the static and like the dynamic musicianship and strings and all the stuff around it really makes it like really special for me. And I was wondering, did you guys hear that yourselves, or is that something you kind of feel in this song or other songs? I'll give it to you, Brendan.
Yeah, I'm as you're saying that, I'm trying to think of what makes me like groove to Island Letter and what puts me off to Sexual Healing. And I don't have a good answer for that, but I totally agree with you. Like pound for pound, static drum groove, but one of them hits me really nicely and the other one doesn't.
Right.
And I know that, I don't know, but like according to my research, it said that that was a analog drum machine. I don't know if that's different from, you know, the Roland TR-808, but that's what, you know, it said is analog drum machine. And then I just want to go to my other pick, and that's Love and You and I from Jazzanova. And I don't know if you guys I don't know if you guys know this song, but I'm pretty sure it's like samples now that we're kind of talking about it. I kind of read some things behind it about how they use a drum machine to kind of help put it together. And then like took the drum machine out and then maybe put samples in to kind of to put it together. But I'll be honest with you, Love and You and I, I've been trying to wait for a podcast episode to throw that song. So I just figured this is the closest I'm ever going to get.
Everyone's got that short list of like, how do I squeeze that in?
How do I squeeze this
in? And as far as the talking about, you know, why I, you know, you like this, you know, this fake drum groove and not this fake drum groove. I think there's got to be you know, an understanding with yourself that your personal taste doesn't always have to make sense. Because sometimes some things are hard to explain. Like, it's not even nostalgia. It's just like some inane thing out there in the universe that, why you like something.
Yeah, that is super true. And I find myself doing that quite often, where most of my picks don't make any sense.
If you try to find answers, sometimes you're going to not like what you see. Or, like, you know, it's like you just can't explain it sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely agree with you there. There is a kind of another thing that I want to kind of bring up, and that's in terms of the use of hybridization of the drums in a drum machine. What does, I guess, live drums do for the track in concert with the drum machine? Like, why not just use like regular drums, or why not just use what's the mix that actually does the magic there?
Go ahead.
Well, I think for me, if you're playing alongside a drum machine, what's interesting for me is to manipulate the drum machine sounds texturally, so they just completely contrast with the acoustic kit. So it's like, so you have just like so much rhythm going on. It's a sea of rhythm, but you're afforded these like crazy liberties. Like, instead of a kick drum, you could put any sound there, and just the rhythm of the kick drum is the same, but it doesn't have to be that. Or you can change snares to claps just with the click of a button, or anything. And then you can process it to your heart's content. So I find that to be super interesting, because if you're able to manipulate the actual sonic timbre and nature of the drum machine, all of a sudden you are like building this sonic world that can be an integral part of the aesthetic of not only the record, but like what the artist sounds like. And then you can take it on the road too, and you can incorporate those in your show. And so
that's true.
And your fans will count on hearing those sounds.
Go ahead, Freddie.
Yeah. All of the above. I think like in terms of the song that we're using it on, to me, it's like, almost like, Wizard of Oz going from the black and white world to Technicolor, or vice versa.
That's a great way to think about it.
Also, like, this is an effect that I've heard used on a lot of records, where you go from a filtered sound, real small and compressed, and then all of a sudden, glorious, full spectrum stereo. It's that kind of effect in my brain, at least. You know what I mean? And then as far as the live thing is concerned, yes, there's certain, there was a tune that I was playing on tour with Amos. Look, some people are really good at this hybridization thing, live and in the studio. There's a guy named Stephen Wolf from Philly as well, great drummer, who was kind of like the hybrid guy in the studios. That's his thing. I mean, great drummer. He was playing with Grover Washington when he was like 18. Wow. But, and right now he lives in the studios, and his thing is hybrid. But I digress. So there was this song that we were playing that called Vaporized, and it was like a trap drum kind of part. And it was challenging for me. So what we wound up doing was, I have a pad, Roland drum pad. So we'd have Zach standing next to me playing the pattern on the drum pad, and I was playing like the intro pattern, like on the side stick and the cymbals, just giving it a real ticky tacky sound. And then eventually I kicked into the real drum, like kick and snare, and we were playing together, and we were playing to a click. So that way we were really locked. And that's one way around to interpret. But there's guys out there that are just monstrous when it comes to this hybrid thing. I am not one of them.
Yeah. I'm sure you're being hard on yourself there. I'm sure you're great at it. I will say so one thing with the drum machines is it allowed, you know, recordings to kind of use also different sounds for the drums, as opposed to just like, you know, snare, kick, you know, I don't know, cross stick, right? Cymbals, whatever. So it just opened it up for, you know, the kick could sound like a zipper or something, right?
Right, right.
So, and I know Freddie, you kind of are now experimenting on your kit with, I don't know how to describe it, but you can record live kind of drums on it, but now send the signal out and then
MIDI,
with the MIDI, and now they could be any sound, right?
Exactly.
So that's actually, in my head, it's actually started from the drum machine where they first were like, oh, we don't have to use a drum sound. And now you're kind of taking it full circle and, you know, making a real drum sound, like from a real live drummer, and then manipulating the sound to sound like something completely
whatever
different.
You want. Yeah.
Which I think is like kind of a cool way to kind of full circle, like, now that you've conquered the drum machine now, Freddie.
I'm the boss here.
you could tell.
I'll tell you what to sound like.
You could tell a Marvin Gaye's Roland TR-808 to go suck one.
I do actually have the 808 sounds on my V drums, but, you know,
gotcha.
It's fun. Especially right. That kick drum. Everybody loves the Roland 808 kick drum.
Best.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, we're going to take a short break and be back with some of our honorable mention picks. So hold on. And we are back, and we're going to, before we get out of here, we're going to give you guys a couple more songs for you guys to kind of take along with you and kind of explore in relation to, you know, the drum machine and the sounds it kind of makes. And we've actually got some big hitters here for our honorable mentions. And I just want to go to you, Adam, for your honorable mentions first, because you got two pretty big ones there. What do you got, buddy?
All right. Yeah. I know. And just a quick musing, because, you know, as I am with you, Corn Teeth, and only knowing so much about the drum machines and hearing so eloquently by our two spokesmen today. But, like, I don't know, say drum machine. Is there, like, bass machine, guitar machine, vocal machine?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I feel like there is in a way, but this just doesn't have quite the profound effect. I don't know. But, yeah, no, my two honorable mentions are both a Genesis alum that I'm a big fans of, and I went with Games Without Frontiers from Peter Gabriel's third self-titled album, Melt. Fantastic there. Might even be Phil Collins doing some hybrid drums on there, because he did the first track. And then Phil Collins, In the Air Tonight. Also kind of a famous drum groove there, but I don't know. I had to throw Gabriel in the honorable mentions, because I feel like besides Willie Nelson, I probably talked about Peter Gabriel the second most. So, you know, give some air to the others.
He's your prince for Aaron.
I haven't had the intervention yet, but
it's coming.
My Beatles.
Yeah.
you got a guy. What are you talking about? You got the Lowell George family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when's the last time I brought him up?
That's true.
Yeah, Willie, it's really, actually, we're almost approaching the 10th podcast, since I have to do my every 10 Willie. But I couldn't, I don't think he, I don't know if he did any drum machine, or at least not in his 615 albums.
Oh, I hope not.
Me too.
Yeah, you got some homework out there, everyone.
Yep, find it.
Freddie, let's go to you, man. What are your honorable mentions for the show?
Well, one honorable mention, and this is interesting. I've heard this rumor about the Cars, and this was the song Drive. Who's gonna tell you when it's too late? Great song from the Heartbeat City album, which was a Lindrum. I heard that after a certain point, Rick Ocasek was just using nothing but a Lindrum in the studio. And that's a shame because David Robinson's a great drummer. But that's what I heard. It might be true. It might not be. Maybe there was some hybridization going on. But Drive was a big hit for the Cars, and that was a Lindrum. My second honorable mention, actually a song that was just used a Lindrum in the studio. I mean, Maestro Rhythm King in the studio, I believe. But the live version was actually the one that became the hit. It was Bob Marley's No Woman, No Cry.
Yes.
The studio version has a drum machine, but it's the live version that became the very well-known version around the world.
For good reason.
I must confess, I heard this. I was like, I thought I liked the song. What's going on?
Yeah.
Different version. Much faster. Not the same vibe.
I was like, you're tricking me somehow here. I don't understand. But I will say that Drive song, yo, that song is amazing.
And great song.
We're going to cover that song. You watch.
Cool.
We're going to do that.
I'm down.
Because that song is so good. Adam, what do you got?
I love it.
While we're talking Bob Marley really quick, I just, since we're all kind of somewhat vinyl people here, I just remembered I inherited not through death, it's through, inheriting a collection, and I got a copy of Bob Marley's Legend, like one of the original pressings from the early 80s, and like half of the songs were like remixed on there, and I didn't recognize them, and that just kind of blew my mind that I thought I knew all these hits from like Legend, from listening to Legend, but like an early vinyl pressing of Legend had like half of the songs were remixed, and it was and with a lot of drum machines. So I guess it's appropriate for the pop.
Bummer.
Yeah, that stinks.
Well, I will say one way that you can to enjoy the Rhythm King version of No Woman, No Cry is to pitch it down and also slow it down a little bit, like 10%. And it starts to sound like Bob, and it starts to sound like the song that we love.
Wow.
Are those all of you capable?
Yeah.
Just push your 10% button.
Engineers out there.
Yeah. Well, I remember I had that experience when I was a kid. I got Naughty Dread on CD, and I remember having this CD player that had like a pitch control and a time control on it.
Whoa.
And I remember playing with it, and I was like, oh, it sounds good now. I was like 13. I had no idea what I was doing. I just knew that something about that version rubbed me the wrong way.
Wow. Mm. That's cool.
All right, guys. Well, you heard it here first. All right. Brendan, why don't you stay with you? What are your honorable mentions, sir?
Okay. Well, I broke my rule because both of mine, neither of them use like a classic drum machine. So the first one I went with Beastie Boys Intergalactic, which I'm pretty sure is just samples. It sounds like samples, but it is a program beat for sure. And then my second one, the aforementioned Idiotech Radiohead off of Kid A, which uses a modular synthesizer.
Yeah, I'm saying, huh? But I have no idea what the hell that is.
if you can picture
like,
it, like,
oh, interesting.
One of those like vertical synthesizers that have all the patch cables coming out. If you've seen those before, that's what we're talking about. It sounds very much like a drum machine, but they just work much harder on a modular synth to get it to sound like a drum machine.
Right, right. Like, would that be similar to like a Fairlight, like something like that, where you could like just program in any kind of sound?
I think so. Yeah, it's based in synthesis first and foremost, and then you have to really tweak it from there. Rather than a drum machine, that's based in rhythm first and foremost.
Right, right.
Okay. Huh. Learn something new. / still don't know anything about that. Anyway, here's my take on my honorable mentions here, guys. My first one is "Girl," 1985 song released in 1985. It's by Prince. It's not a well-known song by Prince, but it's maybe one of his better ones for sure. It's so just tasty and sweet. And then, you know, as a Philly guy, I couldn't leave off this list without tacking on "I Can't Go for That," "No Can Do," released in 1981 by Hall & Oates. And this definitely has a drum machine in it. And
I can't believe none of us picked that. I mean, it's so good. It's so perfect for the song.
Yeah, it is.
It really is.
I'll be honest with you, like Hall & Oates is just like in the air, so I don't necessarily think about them. They're just right. Like I walk down the street and I'm like, Hall & Oates, Hall & Oates.
You just hear it.
But it's
in
not
the
something
wind.
I think about. just hear it in the so, wind.
It's funny. I'm looking it up right now. It was a Roland CompuRhythm, which is something I don't think we touched on. It's like a rhythm box, one of the early drum machines.
Well, I was going to say, that must have been very early on.
Hmm.
Cool. I don't know that one.
Well, on that note, guys, I think we've given people a lot to think about. And actually, I'm going to kick it to you, Blond Selleck, for the outro of this.
Oh, boy.
Park this promo. Yeah.
All right. I think one thing I did pick up on that Brendan did say is that that the drum machine is kind of dead. So that makes two podcasts, the double album and the drum machine, where we're basically talking about things that are really of no consequence anymore. But it's hard to not think about them contextually, even now. Maybe there will be a reversion back to it, but probably not, because it's all so much easier on the computers anymore. But I think personally I like the drum machines, and I think they help, I think they help accentuate the sounds a lot, and I think we've heard many great explanations today on why that is.
Nice. Great encapsulation. So this is the list. Right Fiction Podcast. Thank you guys for listening. We really appreciate it. Be sure to check us out online, Instagram, at the Right Fiction, Facebook at the Right Fiction, and, on our website, our podcast website, www.rightfiction.com. So on behalf of Freddie Wobetti, Brendan, Patty, Meta, McGeehan, Adam, Blond Selleck, the Dr. Podiatrist Zelensky, and I am, Corn Teeth, AKA Aaron Brown, AKA the John Stockton, the podcast. Thank you for listening. We'll be back again for your ears next week. Take care. Right Fiction.